4NUE. How you doing this morning, sir? Station, this is KO4NUE. Over.
VHM, KO4NUE.
Chad,
how you doing?
Morning this morning, bud. Bill, did you get any rain last night?
Probably almost an inch.
If you get an opportunity today, might wanna check your connections and see if you got any water somewhere. You got a whole lot of white noise in there, but I mean you're audible, but it's just real noisy.
I'll do that. I appreciate it.
I got my situation straightened out up here at the camp, and for approximately 8 feet, my microphone line runs right along the main power leads going into the radio patch panel. So I'm either going to have to put some shielding up or just move it entirely.
If it's that close to power unshielded, you might be picking up some background noise.
So, what you got on the agenda for today?
Just hang out at the house and get ready for next week.
Yeah, weekends are kind of good for that, I guess. Especially in your field. I mean, I did communications in the military for 15, 16 years, and we were constantly sending soldiers to get their A+ and A++ and security clearances, and you know, just constantly having to stay ahead of the game, you know.
Bill, you have to keep current and keep being proactive, no doubt.
In the unit loved it, though. I mean, they were young, and they, you know, we'd send them off to get this certification or get that certification or send them off to this base or get their clearance, and then some of them had some networking MOSs, and man, I'm telling you, when they decided to get out and go out in the job market, I mean, it was just, they didn't have to look hard. I mean, it was somebody suck them up right then, you know.
I know over the years the military made a turn toward more commercial application, and made it so when you get out you could get a job. That's always been a good benefit the last 20 years or more.
The last 5 years of my service, we transitioned into what's called the COTS program, COTS, which stands for Commercial Off the Shelf. And, boy, I'm telling you, that really opened things up for us.
It was several years after I went through my medical training that they changed it so that you were a EMT on the National Register. When you come out, they actually taught the basic EMT course to medics as opposed to just the military combat medic training I went through. So the ones that come behind me have wake up for sure.
You're on Echolink, right? So you're Echolink through your radio, or you're going through the internet up to Caesar's Head?
Well, on a portable.
All right. Well, your noise is sporadic. It comes and goes. It's like it's one second it's there and next second it's not. That sounds just like water to me. But I'm not an expert.
I'll check it out, because I'm running a little handheld with a roll-up antenna, and the coax is running outside where I got it hung up, so it could be full of water.
Last night was pretty interesting up at the camp. So I've got my crossband repeater up there, and I am scanning all of the Warren's repeaters. The radio has two heads. One I can talk on, and the other one I can just scan all of the repeater frequencies. And sometime during the night, I guess the National Weather Service activated, send out a tone, and that activated. When that happened, from my eyes, now I'm not saying this is what happened. I'm saying this is what I'm thinking happened. Is that three of the local repeaters linked as soon as that tone went out, and all the way from Glassy Mountain, Long Mountain, Sassafras Mountain, Marietta, and Greenville. So that would be five repeaters linked. So information could be distributed throughout.
Really kind of impressive if you think about it. Getting that kind of range. Might have a little latency, but other than that, that's impressive technology to be able to do that.
I thought it was pretty neat, and the repeaters would send out a message. Each repeater was different, though. The one in Glassy Mountain, I think it sent out a message saying repeaters linked, and maybe posted the time. I can't quite remember. But it didn't tell me who it was linked with, but I could watch the scanner and see what repeaters were coming in on the scanner, whereas before the link was posted, I wasn't getting a whole lot of traffic off of those. So I'm assuming they linked repeaters within the storm coverage, because it was pretty bad last night.
Thunderstorm here in Hartwell, probably about 7 o'clock, I guess it was, and it rained and thundered and lightning for a good solid hour.
The river came up, I don't know, about 18 inches during all that. I mean, it was just basically flash flood, you know, and It gets a little scary in that little cabin, you know.
Yeah. How far off the water is the cabin?
16 feet in elevation and 200 yards in horizontal length.
Won't flood, but that's still a good rise for it to make it. But we do have some pretty good torrential downpours during the summer.
12 miles, I might well say it's any different than any other river, but there's something different about it. It gets pretty violent, pretty quick. And it may be that I'm just not used to being around other rivers. But I took some video of it. I think it was back during cold weather. I was probably, water level got to a point to where it was within 4 feet of elevation from the cabin. And that took, I don't know, probably around 18 to 20 hours after the rain subsided. So it gets a little hooky from time to time.
Yeah, a little bit for the water to make its way downstream, for sure. The where I go fishing, it can rain up in the mountains, and it takes about 2 days before the river turns muddy where I fish at and rise. So it's an amazing thing for sure.
Kind of bucket list thing that me and my wife want to try. We want to get in a kayak and try to make it to Lake Hartwell from where we are. I wonder how many miles that would be and how many days that would take. You got any reference on that?
I don't. I would, if I just had to guess, I mean, you're probably talking 5 to 7 days worth of just paddling and drifting, just based off some of the kayaking I've done. I mean, you can do, you know, depending on how fast the water's moving and how far you're willing to paddle a day, but you know, 12 to 16 miles in a day is not undoable, and depending on the route you take. I got a friend that does a lot of paddling down in South Georgia into Florida, and they're doing about 50 miles in 3 days.
Well, we've been considering it. The only downfall we've got is that we would have to hit the river when after a rainstorm to get past all of the, you know, the damage from the sides of the banks. There's a lot of trees and things like that because it's pretty remote out here. So that much water moving that fast, if you're at the cabin and the water gets that high, you can actually feel the water, and it, you know, it's 100 yards away, and if you stand barefooted on the cabin, you can feel that much water moving that far away. It's pretty intimidating.
You might consider a shorter leg and put in further down. If you got to do that could be dangerous, actually.
We tried on a little flat bottom John boat back in the spring. We had a short shower for, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes, and then we waited another hour or two after the shower and let the water level come up just a little bit. And so we went down maybe a mile or two in that little flat bottom John boat. And we didn't get in any kind of trouble or anything, but we definitely needed that higher water level to do that.
And if you're in kayaks, I mean, you can still make it in, not fun, but you can still make it in, you know, pretty low water. So some of it may have to be, get out and drag it and paddle and take it around, port it around things, just depending on where you're at on the river.
I've decided she wants to get her license, so she's been studying to get a technician license. And she wants to try going the soda route. I'm more of a POTA guy, but she wants to do soda.
I'm interested in getting her license. That'll be a good thing. Good way for y'all to keep in communication and have a little fun.
Another thing I want to ask you about, Bill. So me and my wife are going to France in October, and we're going to do the tour of Normandy. I've always wanted to go to the beaches of Normandy and see what, you know, what our soldiers went through. Do you think it would be inappropriate or weird to try to make contact with the Caesar's Head repeater through Echolink and just take about 2 or 3 minutes and just kind of describe what we saw from France, I mean?
Oh, I think it would be an interesting contact location.
That on HF, but it's just, you never know. I mean, it's so unpredictable and that kind of thing. But I have made contact with Jean, and he's about 20 miles above Normandy. I've made contact with him, so we're gonna meet when I get to Normandy and check out his little ham shack and take some pictures and things like that, But I just thought it would be kind of neat to just kind of describe, maybe during a rag chew or a net call or something, what I saw and how, what kind of impact that was.
I think that'd be a good thing. The definitely something unique and different, and done. And I know you will do it respectfully. It'll, I think it will be a good thing to do.
Absolutely. Can't be any disrespect in that, But like I said, I've done 2 tours in Iraq, and I just got a feeling, just from what little bit of research I've done and what I've seen on TV, which is not always the right way to look at things, but I got a feeling this is a whole lot different than what I did in Iraq and what I experienced.
I had some family that was involved in the Normandy invasion, and I have one uncle that survived, and he would talk about it some and tell some stories, and it seems to be a whole different experience than what most people think about. He used to talk about getting ready, being on the boat, not knowing where they were going and what they were doing until they got there, and then they were told and landing, and I can't imagine not being a 18-year-old and you put one of them floating boats and run to the beach, and all you got is machine gun fire. That just is unfathomable to me.
Remember when the Twin Towers were hit? I went straight to the unit, and it was, I don't know, man. It was just an overwhelming desire to, put me on something, send me right now. Let's take care of this right now. And I like to think that some of those soldiers went through that. And I also know that they had to be some fear involved there, because fear is a really good motivator under the right circumstances.
There, fear can paralyze you, or it can make you do things that you never thought possible and keep you alive. That's for sure.
But from the second deployment, the second one was a lot worse than the first. I mean, it was pretty bad. On days, every day wasn't bad, but when I came back, me and my family were sitting at the table one night. We were eating hot dogs, and I started telling my family about one of the times that I was just really horrible, just a real bad situation for me at the time. And one of my kids interrupted me and said, "Daddy, please pass the mustard." And I don't know, Bill. I just learned right then that when you live through something that's fearful, your words cannot convey what you felt. And I think that's one of a couple of reasons that veterans don't ever talk about their experiences, because there's just no frame of reference for somebody who hasn't been through it.
Else you take any traumatic experience, whether it's even a car wreck or a loss of a loved one, until you've been through that, you really can't comprehend the emotions and everything that come with it. And, you know, war is a horrible thing, and something that I believe should be avoided at all costs, but is necessary at times. And, you know, what we put people through to keep this country safe that's why they say it's a debt that can never be repaid, because, you know, only, I think it's the average 1% of the U.S. serve in the armed forces. So you've got 99% of the country that have no frame of reference for what it even means to go through basic training, much less be deployed and have to go through the true horror of war. So, yeah, it's hard for people to understand or wrap their head around it.
One of the most interesting things that I saw was we got ready to leave the FOB one day, and you can't just leave the FOB. You got to accumulate so many soldiers, so many weapons, and so much fuel and things like that. So you'll sit there for a couple of hours till. Well, I was trying to get to the local market outside of the perimeter, and I'm sitting there at the gate waiting for enough soldiers to accumulate, and I see this. I assume a grandmother, a daughter, and two granddaughters. They're walking alongside of the gate, and they're looking for something. And the grandmother, she rakes out this depression in the sand with her hands. I don't know, it's probably big as 2 or 3 basketballs, I guess, maybe 2 or 3 feet depression. And poured water in it, and had her daughter, her granddaughter, stir that water into that sand. Let me let this repeater cycle. It's KO4NUE, station ID. In Iraq, there's absolutely no moisture in the air, so it doesn't take long for water to evaporate. And as they stirred that mud and sand with that water, and I don't know, 20, 30 minutes, the water had pretty much evaporated. And this salt that you eat, like that kind of salt, came out of the dirt and started to form on top of this mud pie that they had formed. And the grandmother, you know, raked, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 tablespoons of salt off of that earth, and put it in a little bag. And it took me a while to think about that for a little bit, that, you know, when you go to the grocery store and you pay 39 cents for a bucket of salt, you don't think anything about it. You know, you just put it in a shopping cart. But that was a little different, you know. I mean, when you got to go and get it that way, that tells you a lot about the people.
It's not, everybody can't go to the local Walmart and pick up what they want when they want in this world. And a lot of people don't realize what it takes to survive. And, you know, humankind has been very resilient to be able to do those things. And it can be a tough one, no doubt.
My wife were talking the other night. One of the other interesting things that I saw was man, you know, you have no women here in the United States. They have no concept of how women are treated in that country. I can't even describe to you. I mean, they are lower than dogs, some of them. I mean, it's just, it's really bad. I mean, really bad.
In general, just the treatment of people across the world varies so much. And like you said, people don't realize the freedoms and the rights we have granted through our Constitution, and that's why people are willing to go do the things that they do to preserve and protect. And, you know, it's, again, I'll go back to that 1% that serve. There's 99% of the country that just can't fathom what it's really like outside the borders of the U.S. Not counting vacations and things like that. I'm talking, like you said, you know, real world, third world countries in the way things go and are treated. It's, it can be deplorable.
But as tough as both deployments were, I learned so much just from experiencing that. You know, some of it was not fun at all. But you know, one of the most important lessons I learned was just, it amazed me at what extent humans will go to try to cause harm to another human. That just blew my mind. I mean, absolutely just blew my mind. And just without discretion, just, that doesn't matter who we kill, just kill. I could not ever wrap my mind around that.
Jim, I think. Yeah, you're right, Chad. There's a lot of things done in the name of something or someone or that give people their motivation or their purpose or whatever, and it's hard to understand, that's for sure.
The important thing I learned was how close you are as a human to chaos. And what I mean by chaos is that there were a couple of times there that a good frame of reference is about 3 meals. Water's a little different, but food, we are all about 3 meals away from some kind of chaos, and that really scared me. And I don't think I'll ever forget that.
If you can't go to the grocery store and pick it up, a lot of people are going to be in a lot of trouble. That's one of the problems with the country we are in today, is we're dependent upon someone else providing resources as opposed to where we were in the early 1900s, where everyone took care of themselves and their neighbors.
That's the third lesson I learned, was the power that people have to control chaos just by showing a little bit of love and respect to your neighbor. That was tremendously powerful. And to witness things like that at its basic core, I'm not talking about, okay, well, you know, grandma's sick down the road and let me go help you get your groceries. That kind of help. That is helpful. But just with basic things and being just social and just that absolutely blew my mind. I don't think anybody here in the States understands. Well, I wouldn't say that. I just think that I don't think that the average person understands or is able to see what effect that has to be able to be a neighbor, a true neighbor, and help with whatever needs helping with. And I mean whatever needs helping with.
With you there. You know, today's students that are entering college were born after 9/11. They have no memory of it. Only reference they have is what is taught in textbooks. Kind of only difference is just like I didn't live through Pearl Harbor, but I learned about it in school. But, you know, they're not even really teaching history, in my opinion, like they did 30 years ago. So it's a change in world.
When halfway through the deployment, you get 14 days leave, and you can go pretty much anywhere you want. Me and my wife, we chose not to, for me to come home. We decided to meet in Germany and stay in Germany for 14 days. So about the fourth or fifth day, we ended up at Dachau to see, you know, the concentration camps and try to learn a little bit about history. And Mrs. KL4NUE, station ID, I'll be right back. I just want to lead into this conversation by saying I realize this is a touchy subject, and if I'm doing something I shouldn't do on the radio, somebody please let me know. I'm just describing what we saw and what we felt. But we went into that place, and I can't describe to you what we felt when we saw how that place functioned and what it did. The other thing is that we learned that when you are a senior in high school in Germany, it is a requirement before you can graduate high school that your class take a trip to one of those concentration camps to see and learn from the past. So we had one of those classes there, a bunch of teenage German children at Dachau going through the tour so that they could graduate high school. And I just wish you could have seen the expression on their faces. I mean, it was shocking.
You see how it could be any other reaction to anyone with morals and values of life, looking back at that. You know, what happened then was a horrible, horrible thing. And for those that defended the freedom and the lives of others during that time, I can't even imagine what it was like.
It was something else. And that, there again, that goes back to my first point, is that it is amazing what one person or one group of people will go, what extent they'll go to do things like that. I don't know, Bill, it just blows my mind.
There's a lot of pure evil in this world, but on the same hand, there's greatness, and there's grace, and there's power of redemption. So I'll even say there's forgiveness. But there's never the forgetting what was done or will be done as we go through this little chapter of our life. And, you know, my belief is very, very simple. I'm going to spend eternity with a lot of people. And the ones that I spend it with have found a way to cancel out their demons and find that redemption in Christ. And that's what keeps me going.
I hear exactly what you're saying, and I'm right along there with you. But I will say also, when we live in that kind of environment, exposed to grace and forgiveness and redemption and things like that, when you go to a place where things like that are not common knowledge or not practiced, it's just unbelievable. It's unfathomable that just how quickly that becomes violent. Without those three words, just how violent things get. And it's amazing.
I agree there. And like I said, it's just like everything else. It's not everyone's going to make the ride. Not everyone's going to reach the destination that you are. And we just have to be content that we've done our best to be the best, follow the word, and do our part. That's all we can do. And we have to understand what our calling is and do what we do in this life the best we can. And hopefully, in the end, we've made a difference, whether we know it or not, to someone else.
New East Station ID. Yeah, I think what a powerful tool it would be if you could show people, and not just show, but have them experience and live situations where redemption, grace, and forgiveness were not present. You want to talk about a motivator to change yourself as a person and to be more helpful to people and be more helpful to society. Man, that's a pretty powerful tool to be able to do that. And anybody that goes through traumatic things, if they're able to work through the trauma eventually, I would hope they would be able to get to that point to be able to say, hey, what I did or what I saw was horrible, but here's what has come out of it. Here is what I've learned, and this is where I need to focus to make changes. You know, and you don't want to say, well, I wish everybody could experience that, because you don't. But for the ones that have, that's where changes take place. And, oh, what great changes they are.
They are great changes, they are. Chad, I need to round up my dog here. She's been out for about an hour, and she's sitting here looking at me like, are you going to feed me breakfast or what? So she's sitting here at my feet ready to go back in the house. So I've enjoyed this conversation. And hope you have a great day, and maybe we'll catch up again later today. If not, definitely in the days ahead. So you be safe, enjoy yourself, and 73's my friend. This is N4WHM. I'll be clear on your final.
N4WHM, KO4NUE. Thanks for the conversation, Bill. I really appreciate that. And I'm 7-3. You have a wonderful day.
KO4PSB.
PST, I believe it was. This is KO4NUE.
It's KO4. I'm the Pi X-ray Bravo.
Bravo, this is KO4NUE, Chad, and I'm mobile. How are you today, sir?
This is Lloyd. Chad, what deployments were you in Iraq?
It was, we were in the country 8 days after it kicked off, and we were told we'd be there for about 90 days. But I think about 18 months later, we came home, stayed home for three or four more years, retrained, re-prepared our equipment, and then moved out again for this time approximately 12 months in country. But by the time you put MOB and DMOB on the front and back end of it, you're about 14 months in.
KO4PXB. Roger, I was there during the same time frame when the first war kicked off.
Where were you stationed?
We were in Camp Buring starting out, and then we went and moved into Balil.
Oh, Buring. The armpit of the earth. You know that place is still there? They've, it's all asphalt and hardtop. It's like a little small city, you know. I got a friend that just came back from there, but, I went through Buring on the outtake. We flew straight into Baghdad International on the first deployment. And set up comms there. And I tell you, when we got there, it looked like Armageddon. I mean, it was just, you know, my first thought was, I'm from Campobello, South Carolina. People from Campobello don't experience things like this. You know, it was just surreal.
Hey, Chad, what's your last name?
What's up, brother? When'd you get your license?
About a month ago.
Good deal, man. Good deal. Where's you stationed at? Down in the White Noise, but I can't pick you up. But if you can hear me, hey, you need to check in on Blue Ridge 2 meter net during every night at 2100 and get your call sign out there. And really good hobby. And if I lose you, which I think I am, hey man, it was really nice to hear you. And I'm on the radio all the time. You write my call sign down, KO4NUE, and we'll link up.
TXB, Roger. Is that any better? I'm moving forward.
Yes, that's much better. You want a handy or you want a mobile or what?
Handheld, any tone.
Yeah, much better. So, how you liking the hobby so far?
Well, like I said, I've heard people from California already. I heard somebody from Australia yesterday. They were on the Echo Link.
Echo Link out yet?
I haven't registered my call sign yet, but it sounds like it's interesting because right now I'm using a State Guard radio, but they don't mind us using it, but I'm going to get one of my own.
You don't really need a radio. I mean, it would help things out a little bit, but as long as you're near internet signal, some people say it's cheating, and I guess it is, but it does allow you to get outside of, you know, that 2-meter umbrella. And it's pretty dependable. I mean, I was talking to a guy from France the other day, and just absolutely just really neat. And it's really simple to use, really, really simple. So if you're looking for a way to get outside information or a perspective from outside of the world or the United States, Echolink is definitely a possibility. Just don't forget that it's on that infrastructure backbone, and that's just something you need to kind of remember.
Yeah, when I heard you talking about going to Iraq, I'm going, yep, and first name was Chad. I'm going, I guarantee, and I just told my wife, Tracy, the high tower. We're both definitely working ourselves to death. Have you redone any new tractors?
Well, I don't even know where to start, really. So I medically retired about 7 years ago. Just had enough. Couldn't do any more. Ended up with 27 years, 8 months, and 11 days service. And built a shop. And me and my dad had collected a bunch of equipment over the years. So I put a shop and started a little machine shop. I don't work for the public or anything. But let me let this repeater cycle. This is KL4NUE station ID. If I had a friend, an older man who wanted me to do some engine work for him on a inline 8 Packard, and I guess probably about a quarter way through the build, he got sick and got put in the hospital, so I thought it'd be kind of neat to, you know, film what I was doing and post it on YouTube so while he was recovering, he could see what was going on with his engine. And when I did that, oh man, it just turned into a whole lot more than I want to do sometimes. But I do have a YouTube channel, and the last engine I built was a World War II Jeep, and went through the whole engine build process on YouTube. I don't think I have that many subscribers or anything, and that's not why I did it, but if you want to check it out, you can go to YouTube, just type in Chad Hightower. There's some other videos down there with my son and things like that, but just check anything out on the Go Devil build, and I will tell you, hey, I'm retired, I'm fat, but I'm happy.
PXB, Roger that. As long as you're fat and happy, it doesn't matter.
And you're in the State Guard?
Been out about a year and a half, and when my tour's up for this one, I'm the Sergeant Major with the State Guard, and once my commander leaves, I'm leaving out with it. And so, because there's really nowhere much to go after you get command Sergeant Major.
I left out as a Sergeant Major. I didn't make it to CSM. But once you get that threshold, man, ain't much else you can do. You just have to, you know, have to take it for what it is.
And, Sergeant Major Buddy C is also in the State Guard with me.
Oh, Buddy, how about that? What do you see him? Tell him I said hello. And how's his health? Everybody healthy on your end?
Like I said, he is doing great. He hadn't mentioned any medical issues. Me and my wife have both had our COVID shots. So, and we're lucky we never got the COVID in between that.
My family's got both shots, but we did lose 3 family members. We lost 3 family members within an 8-day period, too. And it's just been a tough year, you know. I mean, just brutal.
I truly understand that. when you were talking about the stories from Iraq, man, you had it nailed perfectly, because that country is truly a country of have and have not. If you don't have anything, you'll never have anything, and it'll always stay that way.
Exactly right, bud. You're exactly right. And, you know, like me and Bill were saying, some of that's got to be a contributor to just lack of grace and lack of redemption or forgiveness or whatever kind of finger you want to put on it. There is something majorly missing, and it definitely shows.
Which what it amounts to is there's such a vast country over there that people pretty much have their own government that they, like community governments, that are unmanaged by the organized government, that it really doesn't matter.
Organized government can't take care of you properly, then hey, you do what you got to do, you know? And I can honestly say, I'm not sure I blame them for that.
Don't, because when you were saying that the communities take care of each other, the people that worked on posts that were the local nationals, they got to go into the landfill. They couldn't open any trash bag, but they could scrounge up stuff, and they would take it back to their community.
A lot of that on certain camps. Other camps had incinerators that they, you know, wouldn't allow the TCNs to dig through the trash for security reasons, but other camps, not so much. But, yeah, it just a culture shock.
About the PTSD and how people don't understand, is my first tour over there, there was one of the military, Iraqi military vehicles that was hit by a Maverick missile, or the paveway, and the people were burning outside the back. You could hear them screaming, but you couldn't shoot them because they were not a threat.
Yeah. Roger that. Well, listen, bud, I hate to cut you short, but I'm at my destination, and I need to get off the radio and go on there and run some errands for my sweet wife. So, but it was a pleasure seeing you, Tommy, talking to you again, and me and Anna were talking about you and Tracy the other day. So, write my call sign down, and you can go to QRZ, look up my email, shoot me an email, and we'll send some personal information, cell phone numbers, things like that, and maybe we can get together and, you know, meet face to face. But this is KO4NUE, Chad, out of Campobello, South Carolina. I'm 7-3s to you, sir, and you have a wonderful day.
KO4PXB, Roger. I still work for the county. I've been there about 18 years, and so I will definitely look you up, and we'll get in touch later on. Bye.